Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
WGR Sports Radio 550 presents Sports Talk Saturday.
The unfair thing about this show on Saturdays is I sit and I do my three-hour show on Saturdays. So I'm vulnerable to saying things that may embarrass myself.
How cool. I mean, awful is that.
On WGR.
Very cool. I mean, awful.
Sports Radio 550.
Hello, this is Nate Geary, and I'm here with a live intervention of my two friends, Joe DiBiase, Derek Kramer. They have never had a Bloomin' Onion.
Do you want salt for this talk?
We are intervening.
What's we? We is us right now combined more than you.
The people listening and tweeting in, talking about how ridiculous it is that two people that they thought they respected literally have no respect left.
First of all, there
I got a guy. I got a guy named Sean here that says he worked at Outback for 20 plus years and he's never had one either.
Yeah, well, you know.
First off,
maybe he only eats meat. What are they? A meatitarian?
Meatitarian? Is that a thing? A carnivore?
A carnivore? Maybe he's strictly carnivore. Doesn't eat vegetable or vegetation.
Now take Joe's name out of this. There's no respect for me.
Yeah,
come
that's
on.
A good point.
Come on, this is easily not the worst thing that I've ever done. So, let's go ahead and just put that one in the bank right there.
I don't know. Truthfully, I don't know how to go on today. Like, I don't know. I don't know where to go from here.
All right, here's what I'll do.
I'll get
you some salt because you clearly are just made of it right now.
Honestly, I'd like to pause the show. I'd like to, you know, you guys continue. I'll go to the fair. I'll come back. I should be back by the end of the show. 2 hours, hamburger.
Yeah. I don't think you're making it back.
That's a bit of a drive.
It's a bit of a drive and the traffic.
And what's the state of that Bloomin' Onion by the time it gets back here?
Better than anything you've ever had.
How does a Bloomin' Onion travel? You know, because like some things don't travel, like fries
don't
travel
well.
You do want
to eat it well. I mean, you do want to eat it like piping hot. Yeah, you. No. I honestly kind of look forward to the burn of a Bloomin' Onion in my mouth, because what it has is it's got a unique thing about the Bloomin' Onion. Not only can it burn the crap out of your mouth, but it could also kind of rip it up because it's crunchy a little. It's not quite like
this sounds excruciating.
Yeah,
you're not doing a great job.
Yeah, you're not doing a good job convincing us.
What's
here?
Another food that's like that? When it could also burn your mouth, but also rip apart your mouth. It's sort of like if you were eating cereal. You know, like when you eat cereal, it just rips
cereal
your mouth
burns.
Up. No, but it rips your mouth up. Cereal, like when you eat cereal.
What kind of cereal are you eating?
Rips your mouth up.
It like
from Schmellogs, it's rocks.
You guys don't have like when you eat multiple bowls of cereal at one sitting, like if you eat
like
three
rip
bowls.
Your mouth up. What do you mean by rip your mouth up?
Like if you were to eat like Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Like Cinnamon Toast Crunch rips your mouth up.
No,
it doesn't.
That doesn't for me.
Maybe you guys aren't taking big bites like I am.
Maybe you're just
okay,
not...
wait. Do you guys eat your cereal with a normal size spoon or the big spoon?
Big spoon.
And you guys don't get your mouth ripped up.
No.
What do you got, steel mouths?
I think yours is made of glass or something.
You
know
what?
Know.
I should have played the U problems open because this is a U problem.
I use the big spoon and I refuse to go to the small spoon. And the big spoon absolutely kills my mouth.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you, man. I don't know what
is
you mean.
Is this another me problem?
Yeah, I think
yes,
so. Right.
This sounds like this is a you problem.
At least we got a lot of opens from the last 40 minutes of the show, you know? I guess if I'm only here for that, then I guess we've done something right.
I mean, first off, I will always gladly make sure that there's something that is allowed
that the people
want to
hear.
Your head explode.
By the way, Tottenham's new stadium is unbelievable.
It's a palace.
It is
unbelievable. They're playing a football. I think they're playing an NFL game this year, right?
They are. Finally. Well,
maybe
they were supposed to last year,
but
it wasn't ready in time.
They were also supposed to play in Mexico City.
And that didn't happen.
So, yeah, they didn't have a great record. Yeah, but this place is, I mean, it looks like an NFL stadium, but like a brand new, like, great looking one. So, yeah.
Our friend Sean, who also worked at Outback for 20 plus years, he Google searched Bloomin' Onion calories. The dish contains a whopping 3,080 calories,
what?
Which is probably why Outback...
3,000?
Outback recommends splitting the dish amongst six or more friends.
And you were eating these by yourself easily, in a car.
Easily.
3,000? That's wow, that's in.
Hang on, I missed something here.
I don't think all Bloomin' Onions are 3,000 calories.
What?
3,080 to be exact.
Well, if they might be close.
Again, you're trying to do a bad job of selling this Bloomin' Onion.
What do you mean? All
me
everything with a lot of calories that means usually means it's delicious. By the way, there's also in this picture
to that. You
in
are
this picture
right.
There is a Bloomin' Onion topped with steak.
Yeah, I'm seeing.
It's amazing.
Right, I'm looking at this article. I think though this is some special. The original Bloomin' Onion is only 1,954 calories.
1,900 calories ain't bad.
So three or more friends, maybe for that one. I got one here with some melted cheese and bacon over the top too. Now what are we doing there? Is it versatile enough to where we're throwing stuff over the top?
I'm a traditionalist when it comes to Bloomin' Onions. I'd rather just have Bloomin' Onion, but if you're gonna throw red meat on it, I'm not gonna say no.
So you subscribe to if it's good enough to be by itself.
By the way, 46% of the people so far say yes, cereal does rip your mouth up.
I'm stunned by that.
Yeah,
I'm stunned by that.
Someone actually just called and said the same thing to
Nick
me.
Nick says peanut butter crunch was the worst for this.
Oh, yes, it was. Peanut butter crunch does rip your mouth up, 100%.
I think I need to go to the fair.
I think I need to go get
some peanut
butter crunch.
I was probably
already
going to do it. But.
What about deep fried peanut butter crunch? Just kidding.
It's already crunchy.
But you know what else? I would say this. Every Captain Crunch cereal tears your mouth up. The original Captain Crunch, like the square rice pops.
Just the
squares?
That's
Captain Crunch.
Yeah, the original.
Yeah.
It's the original Captain.
Right. It's not peanut butter crunch. It's Captain Crunch.
I know. That's what I said.
Captain Crunch.
It's Captain. Captain. Yeah. Captain Crunch.
It's Captain.
The original ones. They are, it's like a salt. Like you...
It's a salt?
It's a salt of your mouth.
Oh.
Not a
salt.
Not like a gram.
Okay.
Not like a
okay.
Not
what,
a mineral.
Not what you
not the
are
mineral.
Right
now.
What not, other cereals are doing this?
Yeah, not
to
what
you
are.
Frosted
you are
Flakes,
salt.
You said?
No. I said Cinnamon Toast Crunch, which absolutely does, because they're large squares and they're pointy at the corners. Like, if you eat a piece of Cinnamon Toast Crunch when it's standing up.
How about
like
Golden
you,
Grams? Because that seems like that would be the thing.
Yeah,
that's got ridges and
not only that, but like Golden Grahams last a while in milk. Like they don't get
they
soggy
do.
Quick.
They do.
Like you have to leave it in the milk for a while for it to get soggy.
True.
Assault. And battery of the mouth.
Meanwhile, you're just salt right now.
Thank you. 803-0551-888-552-550. We don't talk about cereal, but it just kind of where this went. The Antonio Brown situation is kind of the one that you wanted to come in for, so I feel like we should maybe shine some more light on it.
Yeah. It's hilarious.
It's really funny, but it's also
I don't think he's going to I think he's playing.
There's a little bit
there's
of
no
this
no way he's not playing.
No, I know that. I know that. But there's a little bit of this conversation that I don't think that we've really had yet is if Antonio Brown, if the Bills ended up trading for Antonio Brown, he decided to come here and they re-signed him for some crazy number.
Do you remember what John Clayton reported that the deal was going to be? He actually said it on our station.
No.
He had heard that the deal was going to be the Bills were going to swap first-round picks with Pittsburgh to do it. So they were going to move down from 9 to wherever Pittsburgh was, like 20-something,
mm-hmm.
Which means you wouldn't have Ed Oliver.
No.
And no, I don't know. Like, part of me still wants to give them a lot of credit for being willing to do that.
Me too.
But it's weird. Because even though they were willing to do that with the guy who maybe among all players in the league right now you would consider a diva, they were willing to overlook a certain amount of stuff to be able to do that. Now, I'm not sure if they would have been willing to overlook what he's doing right now, but there was enough there that they were willing to say, he's good enough, we don't care.
Yeah.
And then there were also reports weeks later that when the Giants were trying to trade Beckham, they called the Bills, and they gauged their interest, and the Bills were not interested. And that's really where I start to wonder, like, okay, what do they really want to do? If they get a chance to get a bona fide number one franchise, like, always double-teamed wide receiver, will they go ahead and swing for the fences for it? Because they kind of did with Brown, it seems, but they didn't do it with Beckham.
Yeah.
And why the difference? That I don't get. Because
availability,
maybe
out of the last four seasons, Odell Beckham has missed more games than any receiver.
Do you know Sammy Watkins has played more games than Odell Beckham
which
has?
Is crazy.
That's insane. I had to triple check that stat.
9 more games?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, like half a season worth. So that could be right, but then I could poke holes in that too and say, well, how much do they really care about that? They signed Mitch Morris with a concussion history. They signed Kevin Johnson. They signed Trent Murphy. They've signed a lot of players with injury history. So what are they really trying to do there? And I will give them credit for the Brown thing, but I'm still wondering, like, okay, if another number one receiver like that becomes available, like, for instance, let's just use Julio Jones for this. I don't anticipate he'll become available, but he wants a new contract, and at this moment, he still doesn't have one. So let's say that starts to go sour, and Atlanta gets to a point where they're thinking, okay, we will trade him if the price is right. Will the Bills be a team that goes for that? Because honestly, I like John Brown. I like Cole Beasley. They set up those contracts. So if it doesn't go well or if they get a shot to do something else, they can get out of those pretty easily. So, I don't know. I think about a lot them wanting to go for Brown and making me think, okay, Bean really wants a true number one wide receiver. Like, ideally, he recognizes that that's a need on this team for the future, for their young quarterback, and that he's willing to do a big trade like that for it. So I'm keeping my eye out for the next guy that becomes available like that, thinking back to when the Bills reportedly were about to get Antonio Brown. And being very happy at the same time that he's not here currently.
I think that you can definitely be happy about it, because here's the thing, right? Like, I think maybe what the Bills have going for them, and I don't want to sound... I don't know. I don't know how this makes me sound that I say I do really like the way that the Bills are running their organization right now. There are no distractions, almost at all.
True.
Like, it's only football.
Like, they were willing to take one on, though.
No one... Yes, they were. And I wonder, though, if Antonio Brown is in Buffalo compared to Oakland. And I think the Oakland side of things is maybe the most intriguing part of this conversation, is what they did then going to get Antonio Brown at a 32-year-old or 31-year-old Antonio Brown, who already basically quit on a team that
he did, yeah,
that paid him exactly what he wanted when they paid him.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year and a half later, it was no longer good. And listen, I mean, Julio Jones did this to a certain extent, right? He threatened to hold out for basically not being the highest paid receiver, even though he agreed 2 seasons prior to the extension that he was at.
Yep.
He, by the way, he's going to get an extension at the end of this year. He's also 31 years old. So, like, these 30-plus-year-old receivers, the Raiders were unique because they had Amari Cooper. Now, mm-hmm. Amari Cooper is not Antonio Brown. I would consider Amari Cooper right on the top of tier 2. Not a true, true number one wide receiver in the grand scheme of things, but absolutely is a number one receiver. He's just not a DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones, Odell Beckham, Antonio Brown. He's not those. I would contend that the Raiders got worse by getting Antonio Brown and letting go of Amari Cooper in the long run.
In the long run, I agree.
In the long run, they got worse.
Cooper's 24. Super young.
Have you heard? He was traded. Now he's not holding out, but he's waiting for his new contract in Dallas.
The report is they're going to let him play out the season without an extension.
And what haven't you heard? Amari Cooper's not holding out. Right. He's not...
He's really
leveraging
not,
his play against the Dallas Cowboys.
He's in a little bit of a different spot, though. He does not have the track record. He's been very inconsistent throughout his career.
Last year with Dallas,
he was tremendous.
Yeah.
But if I were Dallas, I'd want to pay him right now.
Right now. So that his value can get no higher.
And Cooper, like, that's a little bit different. Cooper, I think, should want to play the season out, do what he did last year with Dallas, but over the course of a full season. And by the way, they should only be throwing the ball more if Ezekiel Elliott's not there. So that could be another boost in his stats. So I don't know. I think I agree with you, though. But it all depends on where you really see Oakland and what you see them doing. The culture part of it, like, they clearly don't really care a whole lot about the character stuff.
Mm.
I mean, they have Antonio Brown and Vontaze Burfict on the same team.
Yeah.
Not to mention Richie Incognito and a bunch of other players.
Yeah.
So that exists. But what are they trying to do? Are they trying to win right now?
Yeah.
Are they trying to rebuild? John Gruden has 9 years left on his contract.
It's confusing what they're trying to do.
Right? Gruden has 9 years left. Ideally, what would you think him coming in he was going to be trying to do? I would think tear the team down and build it back up.
It was a team that had been torn down and had the remnants of the teardown in Khalil Mack. and Amari Cooper.
But they were young.
They were young. So that you don't trade those players. Those are cornerstone players that you build around.
But
that's why you were bad.
To me, when they traded those guys, what I was seeing was, okay, this is a full fire sale. This is a full teardown. People were talking about it that way. Then they kind of, I don't know, he hit fast forward or he half-assed it, and he went out and he got all these 30-year-old players that are good. They're good, but they've got questionable character, and you're trying to hit fast forward. You're trying to win right now. And that's the part that I don't really get. So I would agree with you. Like, why are you trading Cooper, and why are you paying $30 million and draft capital to get Antonio Brown, who's 30 years old? Why are you doing that? And that's one of the reasons why I kind of think John Gruden and Mike Mayock don't have a clue what they're doing. And I think that's not going to work. And the quarterback is factored into that as well. What are you going to do with Derek Carr? Are you really going to buy into him as your franchise quarterback? You could. I don't know.
I don't know how you could. I don't know how you could buy.
They're in a gray area that I just don't think anybody knows what they're trying to do. Are they trying to be a playoff team? Are they trying to rebuild? And they're kind of half-assing it. And I think that's inevitably what's going to work against you. The one thing I'll give the credit Bill a lot of the credit to the Bills for is when McDermott and Bean got here, they had a plan. They immediately said, we are tearing this down. We don't care who's good. We don't care that Sammy Watkins is really good. We don't care that Marcel Darius, even though he's late to meetings all the time, we don't care that he's really good on the field. We're tearing this down, and we're going to build it back up our own way, and we're going to get the cap in shape. And it was all very clear, and it was a concerted effort to do it a certain way. And the Raiders are all over the place to me.
Yeah.
No, I mean, they are all over the place. And I don't know. It's just, I guess what I keep going back to is if he was here and this happened while he was in Buffalo, just the legitimacy of what Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott are doing, I just have this feeling like it could have all been undone by this player. The respect that Sean McDermott's gotten around the league as being a guy that is building and doing this in Buffalo the right way. And say what you will, it's hard to find a national media guy that won't say good things about Sean McDermott.
True. Wouldn't you,
it's hard to.
Wouldn't you want at some point, though, to get like where New England has gotten? When Kevin Connors, when we're talking, you asked him about culture, like he mentioned New England.
You know what their culture
right.
is. Like, it's easily identifiable.
But their culture is so strong that it got to a point where they can take on questionable characters with insane talent because they think their locker room and their culture is strong enough to withhold it. And I think we've maybe started to see a little evidence that the Bills have a strong enough culture and a strong enough locker room to take on a player like that. They tried it with Brown, and I would like to think that if another guy comes along, like if another Beckham, who you might think is a me guy, even though I don't really think that about him, but some people do, or a guy that's had some off-the-field concerns or has had some run-ins with teammates or whatever, do the Bills think, like New England, their culture and their locker room is strong enough where you can now consider a guy like that because of his talent, because the rest of it is strong enough to withhold it? And they've really yet to do that in a big way.
Yeah.
They tried to do it in a big way, but they've yet to really do it in a big way.
You know, the Antonio Brown conversation is only going to get more interesting as more of this is revealed. And I think to Sal's point about Mike Florio talking a little bit about Antonio Brown, and Mike Mayock is boys with Mike Silver, and it's not shocking to me that Mike Silver's out here dropping stuff on behalf of a team. Because I think he's kind of a two-bit reporter, but like he goes out and puts this stuff out for teams, basically trying to wash all of the blame of this Antonio Brown situation away from John Gruden and Mike Mayock, which is laughable, by the way, because
you traded for him.
You traded for him.
Yeah, you signed up for this.
What, the blood is on your hands. You signed up for what Antonio Brown is about. We knew Antonio Brown was about this life. He went on national TV and said, I don't need football. I want it, maybe. I don't know if I even want it, to be honest. I don't need it. I got this blonde mustache. I got these colored things in my hair. Like
the mustache.
I don't need this. I'm a millionaire, he said. I'm an entrepreneur, he said. I don't need the respect of anybody. I got the respect I need. That's a huge red flag. You're going to go out at the one position where you don't want an overly selfish player. You can have a selfish player at defensive end, running back even, right? LeSean McCoy, he teeters the line of selfish, quote unquote, right? Kind of a me guy talking about his yards, his legacy. That's okay. But when you're talking about a wide receiver who can, A, demand the football, which he has, and part of the reasons that he decided he didn't want to play for the Steelers anymore is Juju Smith-Schuster was getting too much love. He was taken away from what Antonio, the brand for Antonio Brown is. Juju Smith-Schuster's success is taking away from my happiness. That's a huge red flag. A young receiver who's done nothing but look up to you, go out and essentially try to embarrass him on social media is what he did. Try to like reveal text messages and direct messages from Juju Smith-Schuster, basically saying, "You're the man. I just want a little bit of knowledge. Tell me about how you can be so good." And Antonio Brown thinks that's embarrassing for Juju Smith-Schuster. There is something chemically wrong in your brain if you think a teammate who looks up to you is like that's somehow embarrassing. Like, that is a big red flag for a receiver, for a human. Like, it's just, there was a lot of red flags. I don't know. It's the most unique situation I've ever seen in pro football, in pro sports. I've never seen anything like Antonio Brown. And I've never seen someone here at the top fall so far so quickly and become out of favor in so many people's minds.
And you might quit the sport over helmet.
Find me a person right now. Right. Find me a person right now with any level of respect for Antonio Brown. Might be hard to find. 803-0551, 888-552-550. If you're sitting out on hold, hang around. We'll get you on the other side. We've also got Kyle Crabb's Draft Network coming up here next. We'll talk a little Dolphins here on WGR.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I thought he had a little bit of a tough time. He was matched against Quentin Nelson on a lot of snaps. You know, he struggled a little bit. Look, I think he's at his best off movement, whether he's slanting, whether he's penetrating. He's not built to take on double team blocks. But of course, in this league, he's going to have to take on some double team blocks. That's part of being a three technique defensive tackle. He's going to have to learn how to use his hands. He's going to have to be a master technique player to play off strength.
That right there is Greg Cassell. He was on earlier this week on One Bills Live. Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. Nate Geary, Joe DiBiase here with you in studio for the next, call it an hour and a half if you want. You want to call it an hour and a half?
How about an hour and 25?
I like that.
Let's be accurate.
Let's be accurate if we're going to do it. Let's go to the Western Hotline now for the Draft Network's Kyle Crabb, who joins us here. Kyle, the first thing I have to ask you, this has been a topic of discussion on the show all morning and into this early part of the afternoon. My two colleagues here, my producer Derek and my co-host Joe, neither in their entire lives, now they're not old, you know, Derek's the old one, I think he's like 30. Otherwise, Joe's like 23, 24, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've never had a Bloomin' Onion, bro. Have you? Tell me you've at least had a Bloomin' Onion and you could come on my side and say, they're damn good, go to the fair and get a Bloomin' Onion.
How do you guys not have Bloomin' Onions at this point?
That's what I'm saying.
If you've been on the face of this earth for more than a decade, you have no excuse to not have had a Bloomin' Onion.
I was hoping this was going to backfire on you so
badly. I knew it wasn't, because I know that Kyle is a man of culture, a man of dignity and pride, and here you two are. I'm not going to get into this, because I'll just start yelling again. Kyle, either way, I'm glad that you agree with me and you're on my side. Anyways, so this week, Kyle, obviously the games started. We actually got some film to grind. Got it. And you grinded some film, I'm sure, this week. What did you see from that first Dolphins game? And maybe more importantly, I kind of want to steer this conversation to Josh Rosen, because I think he's arguably one of the most polarizing players in football right now, outside of a guy named Antonio Brown. But sort of all of the things that were being said about Josh Allen coming into the draft process and into last year, all of those like weird and negative critiques have kind of turned to Josh Rosen. How did he look in his first preseason game, and where is this experiment going?
I think the dynamic here is really fascinating for the Dolphins because they invested so little into Rosen to get him on the roster. They traded a late second round pick to bring him in, but they traded back in the second round, so they didn't technically lose the pick, and right. Arizona's on the hook for his guaranteed money, so there's very little commitment to Josh Rosen. But I will say this, the first two possessions that the Dolphins had when they inserted Rosen in the game in the second quarter were shaky. The pass protection was very poor, and Josh looked very much like the same quarterback who kind of struggled throughout the course of his rookie season with the Cardinals. But as this game went on and as Rosen got more time and he made a couple throws, most specifically to Preston Williams, the undrafted free agent out of Colorado State, he looked like he picked up a little bit of confidence. He threw the ball comfortably in the man coverage as far as throwing his receivers open and allowing his receivers to make adjustments to the ball. He had a really nice throw to finish his night over the middle of the field to tight end Chris Herndon going, or what's his name? They brought him in from Oakland, the tight end from Oakland, who Reggie McKenzie, who's now with the Dolphins, had drafted this tight end and, from the University of Miami. And he did a really nice job throwing a strike to finish that possession before they took him out at the start of the fourth quarter. So Rosen made promising strides, and from a lot of the reports, I know the headlines will read Brian Flores is still committed to Ryan Fitzpatrick as the leader in the quarterback race, but Rosen has had more consistent practices as far as showing off some more natural ability, and he's starting to pick up the playbook, so I think he's really going to start to press Fitzpatrick.
I guess for me, Kyle, where I land, and I think I land where a lot of people probably land, is if you are the Miami Dolphins, right, and you trade, it's not a high pick, right? So it's not a huge issue one way or another if you don't find out whether or not Josh Rosen can be a franchise-type quarterback. But, I mean, it just, to me, it doesn't even make sense. Like I get Ryan Fitzpatrick's there. What do you as a franchise, as if you're Brian Flores, if you are the front office people, if you're scouts for the Dolphins, what do you gain by having Ryan Fitzpatrick play football games? Because, listen, does he give you maybe the better chance to be a worse team if Ryan Fitzpatrick is in Josh Rosen? I guess I don't really know the answer to that question quite yet. But I think... you know what you have in Ryan Fitzpatrick. Everyone knows what you have in Ryan Fitzpatrick. I just don't think anyone quite knows what you have in Josh Rosen. And if you give up assets, whether or not they're legitimate or not, and you're in a season that's kind of a throwaway, okay, it kind of is, doesn't it just make sense to let's see at the end of the day if this is a player that we can build around and not have to take a Tua, not have to take a Josh Herbert early in this draft this year and continue building the rest of the team around him?
Yeah, you're not wrong, but the perception that the Dolphins are quote unquote tanking or trying to lose, it got real popular when they got rid of they let Cameron Wake walk in free agency and they trade starting quarterback Ryan Tannehill and they lose their losing passer, their leading rusher, their leading receiver, their top two sack guys from last year. Like, I understand why that's the perception, but Flores wants to create a competitive culture and he wants to create a culture that's not just gonna lie down and take it in 2019. So he said from the very beginning, whoever is the better player, just like every other position that we have, is going to play. And in his viewpoint, if Josh Rosen cannot beat out Ryan Fitzpatrick, then that tells you what you need to know about Josh Rosen. So they want to have a highly competitive culture amongst, they've done an interesting job of becoming the NFL's island of misfit toys this year, where they're bringing in first-round busts. They brought in Josh Rosen. They just signed Robert Kendiche. They just brought in Adolphus Washington, who was a top 100 pick who didn't materialize for the Buffalo Bills. They have, I think, 7 or 8 draft picks over the course of the last 2 or 3 NFL drafts that were top 100 picks that just did not materialize with their original team. And they're hoping that they can kind of cultivate that talent. So that's the approach of the Dolphins, and from their perspective, if Rosen cannot beat out Ryan Fitzpatrick as a more gifted thrower of the football, then that tells them everything they need to know from an assessment perspective. But boy, would it sure be nice if Josh Rosen kind of turns it around and shows that he can be a quality starting quarterback, because the Dolphins are in line for 5 top 100 picks next year, and if you don't have to invest one of those into a quarterback, they could really start to turn the roster around pretty quickly.
So I'm going to ask this question as a pretty confused fantasy player right now. It seems like we've got a coach that
isn't going to throw Kenyon Drake in as the starter. Kalen Ballage has been getting reportedly some reps as the first team running back. Buying into that Drake is in a timeshare at best now, and like, is he not that good, or are people like outside of Miami just overhyping him? Because when I look at him and when I read and hear about him, it's like people love him, but it just seems like the Dolphins never want to throw him in there as the starting running back.
It's interesting, right? Because Alabama had an opportunity to commit to Drake as a lead back, and they didn't do it. And then Adam Gase trades away Jay Ajayi to make Kenyon Drake the feature back, and it never materializes because there were some study concerns there in processing the playbook and pass protection. And then you get a new coach come in, and the automatic assumption is, well, great, we know Kenyon Drake's a really talented athlete. We know he has the ability to be a big play, lightning in a bottle type kind of guy. And we put the pads on, and Kalen Ballage is getting and sharing the first team reps. So I'm not sure how much of this is motivational for Kenyon Drake. I know Brian Flores, they had teased that there were a handful of players, Raekwon McMillan, the linebacker from Ohio State, is another one who they had spending some time on the second team defense, specifically to try and motivate those players with their performance. And I'm not sure how much of that with Kenyon Drake that is the case versus the fact that I know Miami wants to be physical up front. I know Miami wants to run the football. They're a team that's going to be outgunned and outmanned in a lot of games this year, and they're going to have to play time of possession and slow the game down and take their shots selectively in the passing game. They're not going to spread it out and try and pass it 35, 40 times like Adam Gase did. And Kalen Ballage, at the end of the day, is the more physical downhill runner. Kenyon Drake is a player who likes to try and make guys miss in the hole. So I'm not sure. I think some of that is probably also factoring in for Kenyon Drake, where the Dolphins want to play gap power football and run downhill at people. And that's not really the kind of strength in Kenyon Drake's running style. So I think there's a conflict and clash there a little bit as well as the motivational factor.
Kyle Krabs here of the Draft Network on the West Her Hotline. Kyle, Frank Gore has basically kind of been the one steady hand here in the Bills backfield. Obviously, LeSean McCoy, there's kind of been the narratives and even right within the Bills fan base here that is LeSean McCoy's time sort of coming to a quicker end than maybe we thought with the sort of abrupt upcome of Devin Singletary and how good he's looked in training camp in the first preseason game. What did you see from Frank Gore last season that would make people here in Buffalo feel good about him in another season and what he could potentially bring to a backfield with arguably two Hall of Famers and a really good young running back?
Yeah, he's an ageless wonder, guys. He ran so hard last year, and again, that was going back to one of the concerns with Kenyon Drake, was too much time and too much finesse in the backfield. Well, Frank Gore was the guy that understood where his hole was, he understood where his landmarks were, and he's such a polished and savvy runner at this point that you get him in the open field, he's going to get caught from behind now because his feet are a little heavier and his long speed's not quite as long as it once was because all the miles on the tires. But he's very reliable. He's very smart. He's good in the complementary areas of the game, so you can have him on the field in any of the three downs and you can at least feel good that he's going to execute his responsibility and he's not going to make mental errors and beat himself. And he's still really tough. He's tough to tackle. You know, he's got that low frame and low set of pads, and he knows how to use it. So he's done kind of a nice job evolving as a player to compensate for some of the diminishing physical skills that he can provide, being a smarter and more consistent mental football player.
Kyle Krabs is on the Wester Hotline, covers the Dolphins. Also, obviously, senior draft analyst for the Draft Network. And I want to ask you a question not on Miami, on Daniel Jones, who had a really good debut, a very good preseason debut, I should say, for the Giants after, by the way, Eli Manning and the first team got booed off the field. And I heard a comment from Pat Shurmur that's like, yeah, we're not surprised by it. Like, for some reason, everybody was, but, like, we're not surprised that he had the performance he did. So, and, like, I've been in that camp. Like, when that happened, I was kind of poking fun at some of the friends I have that are Giants fans. But how much of the hate that the Giants got for picking him where they did do you think was overhyped? And, like, what are we looking at? What was your opinion on Daniel Jones coming into the draft?
Well, coming into the draft, Daniel Jones was my third or fourth quarterback. I didn't have a first-round grade on him. I thought that he gave you some limited upside as far as some of the flaws in his game. I didn't think his natural arm talent was really spectacular. My comparison for him was Ryan Tannehill, ironically enough, as far as a guy who can move a little bit. He'll surprise you with how athletic he can be in the pocket and getting outside the pocket. And he certainly has a prototypical frame, but at the same time, like, the ability to feel pressure and have a natural sense of where pressure is arriving from and manipulating the pocket to extend plays within the pocket when you're not going to be that good of an athlete that can really win with his legs, I thought that was a very big hole in Daniel Jones's game, and he had some accuracy issues when dealing with pressure and being under duress and having to kind of sidestep, and the mechanics broke down on him. So, yeah, the first drive was great because, you know, he was comfortable. They did a nice job staying on script, and you think about what Ryan Tannehill throughout the tenure of his career with the Dolphins was able to do. A lot of times when they're on script, it was pretty good. But once you got off the script and you kind of had to adjust the game plan and you're outside of that initial set number of plays, that's where it really came off the rails. So I don't want to put too much stock into the fact that he had a really nice opening drive for the Giants. But he certainly looked better than what I was going to anticipate he was, because I wasn't overly high on him as a prospect.
All right, Kyle, before I let you go, I'm interested in your, I don't know, I guess update here of the whole Kenny Stills situation that started playing out early in the week this week about him kind of coming out against Stephen Ross, who's, you know, hosting a Trump campaign. We don't have to make it political. I'm just kind of interested in your overall thoughts on the reception that not only the fan base has given Kenny Stills, but really the reaction from around the league. I'd say most people are kind of like, hey, Kenny Stills, this is good for you for standing up and saying something. And then there's this faction of either the fan base or just the national football fan base, you know, sending him death threats, like things like that, for just kind of standing up for something that I think most people would look at and say, yeah, this doesn't really make sense. So your thoughts of the Kenny Stills situation and how it ultimately plays out. It seems like he's got the support of his head coach. We haven't really heard, though, from Stephen Ross directly yet about his sort of rebuttal from this, right?
Well, the Dolphins' rebuttal came from Tom Garfinkel, who's one of the executives and I believe the vice president of the organization, was on the television broadcast for the preseason game. And the whole thing was effectively kind of puffing up Stephen Ross's humanitarian, and he has a nonprofit called Rise, which is dedicated to racial equality specifically in sports. And they talked a lot about that on the broadcast, but it was kind of like painfully obvious that, like, okay, you know, we're doing some PR repair here on the broadcast of the game. As far as Stills's comments and the reception from the team, the only thing that Brian Flores had mentioned after the preseason game was he did mention, hey, you know, I probably would have been cleaner if you addressed this directly with Mr. Ross instead of putting this out on social media. So that was like the only kind of negative feedback that Stills got from any of his teammates. And by and large, he has, as you said, he does have the overall support of Brian Flores and his teammates. And Kenny Stills is one of those guys who he spends a lot of his offseason with humanitarian efforts. He's not just, you know, some people see him as a guy who takes a knee, and the reaction to that is, you know, you guys need to do this in your own time and not do it on the field while you're at work. Well, Kenny's a guy that does do it in his own time, and he walks the walk, and I think he has a lot of respect because of that. So I think that's why you see so many people that continue to support Kenny Stills, because if you know who Kenny Stills is as a person, not as a football player, you know he walks the walk, and he's very engaged in trying to keep this issue moving forward and trying to gain traction with making it better for players now and for people in the future.
All right, Kyle, what are you doing tonight for Mina Kimes? She's making her debut as a color analyst on the Rams preseason broadcast. I'm just going to order pizza, kick my feet up, and listen to a total queen do this on national TV. You doing anything special?
This is going to be fun. It's kind of been fun seeing Mina kind of rise up through the ranks as of late. I'll definitely be making it a priority to tune into that game specifically and hear how she does, because I'm excited for her. She's one of my favorite personalities at ESPN, so should be a good time.
Yeah, I just have a dream, Kyle, and it's a simple dream, but a broadcast of Pat McAfee and Mina Kimes would sort of be like
perfection.
Just the everything that football needs right now. No?
I need to get unblocked from Pat on Twitter first. How's that?
Oh,
all right, well, I'll get that campaign going. I've got it in for you there. Don't worry, Kyle.
That'd be great.
All right, brother, we appreciate you hopping on and spilling some Dolphins guts on here on the show. So we appreciate you. I would say good luck, but I wouldn't really mean it, and it wouldn't be authentic. So enjoy the season, and we'll be talking again soon, my friend.
Yeah, consider it the other way there, too. I'm not going to wish you guys good luck. But
it's all right.
You know, all in good nature. Thanks.
That's exactly right, my friend. So we appreciate it, man, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good.
Kyle Krabs there on the West Her Hotline. We got to go to break. We're a little late. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about this Kenny Stills situation because it's an interesting one here on WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.